Hi, welcome to Kyber Science Spotlight, a blog courtesy of Kyber Medical, detailing all things relevant to the field of drug development and precision medicine. I'm Nellie Maloney, and today I had the pleasure of speaking with Dinesh Chandra-Chowdhury, a graduate student in Applied Machine Intelligence at Northeastern University and currently a data science intern here at Kyber. Today we talk about the role of AI in healthcare and how that role is expanding.
Again, thank you so much for joining me. So tell me a little bit about your background. What got you interested in AI and this field in general?
Yeah, sure. So here currently I'm pursuing my master's from Applied Machine Intelligence. So concentration in AI for healthcare currently from Northeastern University. So before coming to pursue my master's, I used to work as a technology analyst at Infosys. So where I got infused to different data sets, different clients working along with the different industries, but my interest lied more on the AI. So whenever first I got introduced to AI, how it is going to be the next game changer in the various industries. So that's where my interest lied. And then I came to pursue my master's here and finally doing my co-op in Kyber.
Fantastic.
So I'm loving it now.
Good.
Because I've been working on that image data set, so which is very unique, and that is related to bio. So like immunofluorescence images, which are like very high pixeled images and very hard to process into the systems, which utilizes more computation power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So let's that kind of segues into my next question. So when we think of, you know, the role of big data and like AI, like how does AI play a role in, you know, data access and processing, you know, this medical data?
Yes. We can say it like before, there wasn't used to be a lot of data. I mean, if you go back a few years, there wasn't a lot of data. Now we can see that per minute, there are a lot of data getting generated in every industries. And utilizing those data, we can train models depending upon the data set or the application or the goals and objectives of our project, whatever we are trying to build upon. And utilizing that data, we can build a models, but it requires a lot of computation power depending upon how much data we are utilizing and what kind of models we are training into it. Like, for example, like if we utilize some of the CSV data sets, so which are like in a data frames format. So those, if even if we have million records, we can go up with certain level of CPU requirement. We can train the model and do a predictive analysis on that. But if it is an image data sets, and you're training just assume 10,000 images for a model, so which can be very harder to train even 10,000 images because it's in pixels and we retrieve more information from the pixels. To train a model upon that, it requires a lot of computation power. So it depends upon the data sets, whatever we are trying to do, and the computation power comes in handy. If we have, we can do everything.
Yeah,
that's what quantum computing they're trying to do, decode now the other field of.
Exactly.
In regard to AI.
Yes. Going back to the basics, though. So can you give me like a small look at the current state of AI in healthcare? Would we still say like it's in the infancy stages?
So if you look at this now, let us assume we have these Apple watches. So which track every minute your data, what is your heart rate and what is the other metrics, blood pressure and whatever. Then depending upon those data, backend Apple is doing this actually. So they try to build a predictive model on top of that data set. So whether they have this, we know that blood pressure should not be a particular level abnormals. So depending upon those, they try to build a models and they'll predict like if a person is going to suffer a heart attack or not, cardiac arrest or not.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever those metrics hit the watch and it gives them some beep, like abnormal, it gives some suggestions. Those all are like machine learning models. Those are running in the backend with the particular chips. AI chips they have in the systems.
And when we think of like this data involved, what about security? Like, are there security issues? Is there like a weird like are there ethical issues that come into play in terms of like sharing of this information and utilizing this information?
Yes. I got it. So yes, so the data should not be biased. So that's one thing. And it is very important if I'm referring to the healthcare, because it is a matter of lives. And if the data is biased, so it can be like very unresponsible. It can make many changes, you know, the metrics. So the data has to be balanced. And So there are a lot of techniques like synthetic minority oversampling technique. If we find any unbiased data sets, so we try to balance the data sets, but still, like, improving the data sets and the data set security, like how the data is being stored, whether the data is being manipulated or not, what are the security reasons? So those are very important. In particularly healthcare AI, I'm seeing that. But yeah, every other industry, the data should be like unbiased, because if it is biased, then we are certainly training a model, so which is going to be harmful for the user, whoever is using or whoever we are feeding that to.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it has been going on recently, lately, very much the responsible AI, because we are seeing these large language models which are booming. And we don't know what kind of data it has been fed upon. Like, it has been openly mentioned by OpenAI. They have open sourced the GPT algorithms and everything, that the data has been outsourced and everything. But still, we don't know what the data has been fed into the back end of the engine. So so that's one kind of... also, it's like an responsible AI is like also an interesting field that's going on separately along with AI. Because until there are no regulations for the AI from the government side, like they have some framework. So whenever we are trying to build a model and it has to be accessed and maybe like validated by someone else in the higher field, where they can give scores whether these models are like good or not. So that can be one of the way. I think White House is working on these regulations for the AI.
Mm-hmm.
They have been posted on their page. I have viewed like a month back, I think so. I was just going through and they have just mentioned, I mean, it's not in working place. Yeah, but they are working towards a framework to create this kind of, just going through some regulations and checks whenever a model is being built on, and whoever the customers are trying to access and use the models.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So kind of switching things over to Kyber. Kyber specifically deals with phase zero microdosing, as I'm sure you're familiar with. So how can AI play a role in this aspect of drug development and personalized medicine? And how is this different from traditional drug development?
Yes. So now what we are doing is like we have the samples of the cancers, different cancers with the real data. So where the tumor has been exposed to the different drugs and how the tumor is reacting to those drugs. We have those data. So now I'm trying to segment the particular immunofluorescence images. So like I'm segmenting the different cells within the image and then trying to retrieve the features of the intensity. So how much the cells have been exposed to the particular drug and how it is reacting. With the intensity, we can find out whether the cells are dying or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one kind of application we are working on currently. So coming to that personalized medicine, so going forward, when we have a lot of data related to different patients, now we have, I think for prostate cancer, we have data related to 15 or 20 patients. So going forward, if we have many more data related to different patients and we have their information related to genetic and how different drugs are, a drug can't be same for the every patient. It is different for the different patients depending upon their immunity, genetic, lot of factors depending. But yeah, going forward, it can be an application when we have a lot of patients and we can try to understand, depending upon those genes and immunity, we can try to give personalized medicine to if we develop a drugs, like if we develop a models depending upon that.
Yeah. So we get to see the individual's response to each individual.
I think other people also been working on this related to personalized medicine. So it has become a big hot topic now recently. So where I've been looking into. So they have these data sets related to small drugs. So which they give small drugs, how they react in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And depending upon those, I think genetics, and they have their gene expression. They have their gene expression, and depending upon the gene family, whether it is from ion channel or like let's assume coupled receptors, G protein coupled receptors. Depending upon that, they are training those models. So whenever a patient comes in, let's assume, and he has some disease with his genetic and with his like other details, the model can give suggestions. Yeah, but a lot of data would be needed, like a lot of lab work is needed to be maintained, because if we have 10 or 15 data points, that doesn't make sense to train a model.
Mm-hmm.
We should have a lot of data. That's how the model can interpret, like we have the probability threshold in this machine learning models. It's not just like giving predictions something. So we have thresholds. So where we tweak the threshold depending upon our problem statement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like just assume for banking industry. So if a person is going to fraud or not, so the threshold can be like we are trying to find frauds. So we can increase those threshold. But in healthcare, we have to be like very informative, what kind of disease it is and what we are trying to build. So the threshold can be manipulated as we want.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So you mentioned, you know, gathering data in order to build these models and like base these models. What are some other current limitations and current problems facing AI in personalized medicine and in developing these models?
Yes. So the first problem would be the data sets.
Mm-hmm.
So where the data have been generated, so we don't know exactly. So like we have this CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention's website, so where it has been maintained by the government, and it is very, like, very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So we if the models are being fed on that and being built upon that, that's good. Like, but still, CDC doesn't reveal everything. So it just gives the stats of the what is going in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't give the every detail. So data is one of the most important to further achieve it. Everything is to be depend upon data because we have multiple algorithms. We have every technique. We can develop any technique if you want to, depending upon the math we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So data is one of the most important, and computation power is another criteria I would like to prefer, because if we don't have the computational power, so we can't train the machine learning models
mm-hmm.
on that. So that's one of the things. And yeah, pretty much data and computational power is enough. Then we can, you know, we can like have some brainstorming sessions and how we can approach the problem.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have the data, even if you have the problem, we can't do anything. So either you try to, that's what we are trying to do at Kyber, because we are initially getting the data now. So as in the long run, we have the data, so we can keep on working on that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Kind of bringing me to my last question a little bit, looking forward, looking at the future. Where do you anticipate the field will look like in 5, 10 years? Is AI going to be a part of the daily lives of patients and people all over the world in terms of healthcare?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's already a part of life. I think so.
Yeah.
It's already a part of life. Yeah, but in healthcare, it is going to be an like breakthrough, I think so, because you would not need a lot of other individuals or everyone working around for the data sets. And if it is related to, let's assume we have a patient and every patient history is there in our systems. And if you try to build models upon that, it would be easy to cure some diseases. You know, the doctors can get real-time views into it and easily can diagnose rather than waiting for an MRI scan.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have the other models I was working on was chest X-ray, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So where we are trying to, like, if there is any cancer, lung cancer or not. So if the doctor can get the insights before an MRI scan, so it can be a very fast forward process.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely it is going to be a world without AI. I think it's not unpredictable now.
Yeah.
It's everything is going on AI. I think about that and it sometimes seems to be scary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now I'm working on health field, so it doesn't seem to be scary.
Yeah.
But other people have been working on it and it's very scary. Like, let us know if you look at now ChatGPT and Bard AI, the other large language models. So they have changed the whole education system. I think the education system has to change now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because how they give assignments, that has to be changed. How the grade, everything has to be changed for the next few years. I think they are going in the back end and they're trying to plan that already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of changes will come into the picture, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It is going to be like life-changing, I think so. Because if you look at the GPT, I use GPT and I learned like biology very easily
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been harder for me to go through every article.
Yeah.
So it is easy to understand some of the, like, I was just surfing through some of the drugs, how the drugs work, like the chemotherapy, what are the different drugs and how it works. It was easy to interact with the ChatGPT and understand from that.
Okay, interesting. Okay,
yeah. But also, every time I do something on ChatGPT, I try to confirm again, go through the Google, and it has to be reflected on a certain way. Like, yeah, whatever you are trying to hear or see anything, it's real. Yeah. It's there in the world, not like something in the cloud.
Yes, yes, fantastic. Yeah, that's all I've got so far. But it was so nice meeting you. Thank you again for talking to me about this, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
For more information, please check out our sources at kybermed.com, where you can also find our publications as well as our blog, Kyber Science Spotlight. From Boston, I'm Nellie Maloney. Thank you so much for joining me.